You're listening to a live broadcast of the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, today you're going to hear the lecture by Michael Cottingham, which occurred on the 27th of May, 1998, at our 1998 annual conference. So get ready to really hear some amazing nutritional and medicinal information concerning what you might think are just weeds growing in your backyard. It's a very important hour.
Good morning. Welcome to day number three. I saw the elephant last night. I think you're all going to really enjoy today. Michael has been a featured speaker at most of our conferences. Not all, I don't think, but certainly most. He's a dear friend, he and his wife and little Loretta, of our family. And Michael will never tell you this, but in my estimation, he is the preeminent herbologist and botanical nutritionist in this country. And he'll tell you a whole bunch of baloney about some guy named Moore. Don't believe it, it's Michael, okay? Because Michael took everything that Moore taught him, picked his brain, and learned some things that Moore didn't even know he knew, and then he went out and learned a whole bunch of stuff on his own, so that makes him the best, in my book. Michael's going to talk to you about an hour this morning, and then he's going to take everybody out on a walk, and it's all going to be totally different. So if you've been to Michael's talks before, and been on an herb walk with him before, you're not going to do anything that's the same this year. It's all going to be different. Different plants, different preparations, and the whole bit. And you've got Michael all day long, so it's going to really be interesting. Now, if you want to save on your doctor bills, and you want to provide some nutrition for your family that doesn't cost you a fortune down at the store, you'll be amazed at what you can find just walking around your neighborhood. Never mind if you drove a little way and went out into the little bit of wilderness somewhere. You can really take care of your family and take care of your nutritional needs by paying attention to what Michael's going to teach you today. And you can do away with an awful lot of very expensive medical bills by paying attention to what Michael's going to tell you today. He can save you an awful lot of money. And your health will be better because of it. Because most of the medicinal plants that he's going to teach you about don't have any of the bad side effects that drugs and things that medical doctors give you. So, without any further ado, Mr. Michael Cottingham. Okay. Well, like Bill said, I thought we'd start outside, but we're going to do about an hour inside, and then we'll do an herb walk, and it's pretty forlorn looking outside. I mean, when you look out at the terrain, it's lava rock and scrappy sand and soil and no offense to the area, but it's springtime, it's a high country, and there's very few plants out there, but you'd be amazed when we walk the perimeter of the property here, you know, that this empty bit of land is just rich with weeds and...
Michael, I just had a fantastic idea. Within about a 40 or 45 minute drive up here, there is a mountain trout stream that's fed by the snow melting. And all along this stream are the most incredible proliferation of plants that you could ever imagine. If you want to, and everybody else wants to, we can all pile in some cars and drive up there, and I bet you that you would find that probably more in line with what you really want to do, if you want to do that.
Okay, yeah. Actually, I was thinking we'd do some time in here, go outside, walk around the property, lunch, and then we'll do some more stuff inside, and then
somewhere between the end of that talk and dinner time, or maybe even after dinner when we still have a couple hours of daylight.
We wouldn't be able to make it up there after dinner because it's going to get dark.
Jeff?
I'd like to take 2 minutes to move that back
while
you're
just out of
the checklist.
Sure, go ahead.
It
doesn't bother me. I think it would be nice to start off with. I mean, there's so many topics, and we'll cover some immense amount of information, such overwhelming information that what I find is that I just put out as much material as I can in a short period of time that. New stuff I've learned, old stuff to reinforce, new plants. I mean, herbal information, maybe when I'm 80 or 90 years old, I'll feel like I have a handle on this. But the information is so overwhelming that a lot of questions arise. And I thought this would be totally different if I started the day with answering your questions, the herbal questions you've had for a long time or things that have plagued you or personal health problems. Because that helps to get things going, and it also helps answer these questions in a way that, you know, may benefit you as an individual and may give you a very valuable thing to take away from my information. I mean, something that's very pertinent to you. And so, I'd like you to use me in that way for coming to the conference and gleaning something from me that's personally extremely beneficial that could last you God knows how long, in benefits and improving your health. And it's so much more than just saving money. I mean, that's an aspect of it. To me, herbal medicine reconnects us to the natural world. And by reconnecting back to nature, you get back into the natural laws, back into the natural way of relating to the world and the basic good concepts. And you get something by learning a few herbal medicines, whether they grow in your yard or you grow them yourself, you get an aspect, a small percentage of self-sufficiency that's priceless. I mean, it's to me, freedom is not about learning, there are many aspects of freedom. You can spend a lot of time learning to drop out of the tax system. You can learn a lot of, so much peripheral information to increase the increments of freedom, but when you look at how much time do we have, learning to grow some of your own food or learning about the concepts of organic food will give you, 10% more self-sufficiency and real, true freedom. People are enslaved, in my opinion, when they are no longer self-sufficient, not only in, governing, but in the daily activities, like the production of their food, the control of their water, the ability to make things for themselves and take control of their lives. I mean, to be able to reclaim some of this in small percentages, I mean, that's what herbal medicine is. It's 10% of the freedom pie. But if you can, and that's achievable. You can get that 10% self-sufficiency and freedom back in your life. And to me, that means you're 10% freer in a real, true, natural world, legitimate sense. I mean, when you can take care of your own health problems 90% of the time, that's freedom. That's self-sufficiency. That's a universal, absolute freedom that has been stolen from us. I often think that, and to me, I relate that the conquistadors came from the New World, and somehow people sometimes think they disappeared. To me, the conquistadors never left. And one of the things the conquistadors did very effectively was drive a wedge between the native people and their relationship to nature. Because by doing that, they were able to enslave them. They destroyed their medicine people, they destroyed their traditions, and made these people codependent on their lifestyles, and thus they controlled them. And I think some legitimate freedom, the only way to approach it is to increase self-sufficiency in your daily life, increments, a little bit at a time. Learning to grow a small garden, where you're growing 2% of your own food. That's 2% less that you have to buy. That's probably 2% less food, less carcinogenic and polluted food. But it's like maybe by the time you're 40, 50, 60 years old, you have 50% pure freedom because you're producing and you're self-sufficient and you're self-reliant. And that's what I feel herbal medicine can contribute to, you know, to all of us. And that was my original concept when I approached Bill many years ago, was that I looked at the Patriot community, I looked at the people who were providing me with interesting ideas and concepts about government and law and trusts and the monetary system. But what I saw that was really absent from the great movement of rekindling freedom was like organic food growing and herbal medicine. And so it seemed natural that I would involve myself with the people who were questing like myself. We were all on the same quest, and I had a little piece of the puzzle that I felt that could benefit all of us. Because I truly believe the more people that have a relationship to nature, the better things will be. Because if you look around us, at the people in the cities, the people in the government, the people who produce our food, there is an amazing lack of a relationship to the natural world. And out of that is madness, disease, chaos. The Cherokee have a great saying that you have to nurture the material world as well as the spiritual world equally. And if you do not, you end up with a ghost sickness. And the ghost sickness is very prevalent in our society. There's no homeostasis, there's a total imbalance. They pursued the material world to the point of madness, and thus they're walking the walking dead for the most part. And I see that from the herbal point of view, that many parts of this country are herbally illiterate, or there are herbal boys, and the tradition was wiped out. There are no herbalists, there are no herb stores, there is no place to go for information about herbal medicine in so much of the United States. It's just the conquistadors are alive and well, and they're very effective in their relationship with severing people from nature, you know, in their job. They've been very effective. The conquistadors just changed names and hats, but they never left. They came to the New World and they remained. Questions. Just herbal questions that have been, you know, since last year, or just this is the time.
Can I ask you a question? Yeah. Okay. In your opinion, have you come across any herbal remedies that can help in prevention of cancer?
Well, food is the foundation of all medicine. And cancer, the AMA even gave us the statistic. They said 60% of all cancer in this country. Now, and statistics like this are very bogus and have very little meaning. This to me means a little something. They said 60% of all cancer is dietary related. And I always translate that to, and this is an AMA, American Journal of Medicine statement, I translate that to, where do most people shop for their food? You know, the average grocery store, Albertsons, Spurs, Safeway, whatever. If 60% of our cancers are dietary related, and most people shop at the main grocery store, ADM, the supermarket to the world type of thing, and that's monoculture food, pesticides, herbicides, fatigue, there's no life force in that food, and if 60% of the cancer in this country is dietary related, to me that translates that 60% of what's at the supermarkets is carcinogenic. Right? I mean, I don't see any other way to translate that, if that's what everybody's eating, you know, and that seems to be the case. The standard American diet, and if you take the initials of those three words, to me translates to SAD, you know, standard American diet. I mean, and 60% of what we buy at the grocery store, that's very conservative. I feel with what I know, and I eat some of that stuff as well. I mean, I'm not immune to that, but it's like, and that's kind of realism, you know. I mean, none of us are saints, you know, maybe on a quest trying to pursue sainthood or some higher enlightenment, but we're all in the same boat, you know. We all have the same habits, the constitution we've all been lied to, we're all coming out of the dark, kind of, you know, some sort of insect breaking its cocoon, you know. But I can go to the grocery store and I can honestly say that I think 90% of what's at the average grocery store is unfit to eat, does lead to cancer. So to answer your question, for a lot of herbs, there's a lot of supplements, but the real approach to cancer is really look at our food chain. you know, the great social worker, not in a bad sense, I think, the great farm worker, Cesar Chavez, you know, looked for years, looked for a slogan, and he came up with a slogan that was basically all we need or all we want is a safe and just food chain. Because if you have that, you really have great concepts. If you have a safe and just food chain, that means that farm workers are being treated well. It means there's pesticides and herbicides at very low amounts. That means people are being paid well, and that care is taken to produce high-quality, energy-driven food. So it was a good slogan that he came up with for the, you know, the farm workers. Union was just a safe and just food chain, and I truly believe that. I think, but that only would come about through a relationship to nature. Instead of a dominator culture, we need to be a steward-oriented culture. That's the only way to survive. That's the only way to pass on a planet that's worth living on, you know, for our children and grandchildren, is not to dominate. We have been nothing but a dominator breed for so long, and we haven't been stewards to the majority of people, and that's what we have to gravitate towards. And it is amazing, we're all on these individual quests, and we all bring a tidbit of information, a stream of information, but it always amazes me the similarity, whether it's herbal medicine or trust formation. There's a really rich common denominator. And it's about freedom, it's about stewardship, it's about a relationship to nature, you know, it's all people on this quest come from different walks of life, bringing their information, but the common denominator is there. Some herbs that are really good for cancer are herbs that fall into a category that are food/medicines. They're, you know, like some of you may have heard of golden seal or echinacea or chaparral. These are hardcore plants with chemical constituents, with chemical compounds that when you take them, they cause change, distinct physiological change. And there's very little nutritional value. Since cancer is a very dietary oriented problem, arises out of malnutrition, arises out of oxidization because there's a lack of antioxidants in the body, and rich foods, foods that are rich, the dark green vegetables. Andrew Weil says that broccoli is probably the greatest vegetable as an anti-cancer food. It's a great, rich antioxidant vegetable, and so eating broccoli 2-3 times a week is a great ally in the fight for cancer, a great antioxidant, which has great potential of keeping the tissue from breaking down. And antioxidants, basically, for those who might not know, are just substances that keep oxidization at bay. And oxidization is nothing more than rust. I mean, a piece of metal oxidizes, the human body oxidizes, cells break down, decay, and then out of that, if you have too much oxidization going on, cancer can come out of that, disease can come out of that. Antioxidants, which are found in foods and in medicine and plant medicines, prevent the rust of the body, prevent cellular breakdown in abnormal situations. Water, I consider, is an antioxidant, perhaps the most important antioxidant. Cancer touches upon dozens of concepts that can be used in other therapies, so that's why I'm kind of elaborating on this. Water, if you drink chlorinated water, but you have all this other information on, you know, how to, you know, make your own bullets and can your own food, and you've got, you know, 2 years' worth of food and a pile of gold coins. But if you're drinking chlorinated water, you're a loser. You haven't learned something. You know, not to be mean or such, but that is one of the most, you know, if you smoke tobacco and drink chlorinated water, you nurture cancer because chlorine and tobacco bind together to form one of the most carcinogenic molecules on the face of the earth. Chlorine, of course, was a relative of mustard gas, and what did they do with that? You know, and there are many countries in the world that do not use chlorinated water. It's a byproduct of our chemical industry, and the people don't know any better, and instead of having to pay for this toxic waste dump, why not just sell it to the municipal? Absolutely. It's an evil, evil, evil substance, and will cause cancer, will cause oxidization, will cause you more harm than almost anything I know that we come in contact with on a daily basis, it is truly an evil entity out there. So if you knock chlorine out, start eating broccoli, you know, start drinking more unchlorinated good water, and that's always hard to define, but, you know, at least take the chlorine, those are two suspect entities that I would, you know, would not want my water whenever possible. And even if you don't compromise, you know, just learn, like, when you travel, I try not to drink the water here, not because the well water is bad, but because the ice cubes that they use come from the plant where there's chlorine. And so, and they put high amounts in ice cubes. I mean, so we bring our own water. It's a, you know, it's a pain in the butt to carry on 5 gallons of extra water or 10 gallons and to go to the truck and to always try to, but to me, it will keep me from, it's a major, you know, you cultivate this bit by bit. Maybe start with taking some vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin E, eating broccoli a couple more times, getting the chlorine out of your life by getting a filter on your water supply. Those are major foundational things that will help you not to get cancer. And if you have cancer in the infancy, maybe keep it from spreading as rapidly. Chlorine and the cancer, they love each other. They feed upon one. It's really, you know, just, I always try to, medicine is best done simply. Simple is best. What handful of things can you do to cause the greatest impact? And it's often not what you take as much as it is what you stop taking. Just stop taking chlorinated water and you improve homeostasis and balance in the body in many respects more than most herbal medicines. And all you've done in the equation was to take away chlorinated water. You didn't have to add anything. It's not that complex. So taking away as well as adding, we're always looking to take more supplements, more herbs, more this, more that. And we forget that taking away from the equation is equally as important when you're talking about balance. And the body is always striving for balance, round the clock, homeostasis, balance, with or without your help. I mean, that's an amazing, you know, creation. With or without your help, it's trying to keep you going. So just take some of these things away from, you know, your system. And cancer, the diet, look at the foundational things, water, food, basic antioxidants. Those are how you affect some of the more serious problems that are, you know, there are no magic pills, there are no, you know, chemotherapies. It's a goat firm stance where you actually decide to take charge of your life, to take responsibility for your life. And that's not to say, even if you're doing that, that you end up with cancer, because cancer is so prevalent that you can be doing all the right things and still it's your time to fight this problem. And that's okay. I always tell people who, you know, have been diagnosed with cancer is never buy into the fear concept. You know, I always fantasize that a study that I would love to do, or see someone else do, because I don't really have the time, but would be when someone is diagnosed with cancer, that because of the power of the word that's been cultivated in society and the fear, the terror that is associated with this word, when the doctor, the great authority figure, tells you you have cancer, it would be interesting to somehow watch the physiology of the human body for the next 2 weeks and watch how, the great percentage of how that cancer spreads if you buy into the fear and the terror of the word that society has bred. You know, outside of the military-industrial complex, the medical world is the second, probably almost now, you know, the greatest, largest revenue. Cancer is a mega-billion-dollar industry. And let me tell you, healthy people don't make money. Sick people make money for this sick industry, for this, you know, allopathic cancer institute. And that's not to say there's not good and great researchers and people in there, but it's a very ugly system. And frankly, these research institutes and would not be in existence if they heal people, if they cure cancer, if they help people cure cancer for themselves by giving them and empowering them with the information that's necessary. You know, if people realize how, seriously realize how important it is to really address the polluted food chain that we have. You'd have a revolution if people understood the importance, because they would understand that 90% of all of our illnesses are dietary related, and they're there because our food chain is totally polluted in the sense of pesticides, herbicides, in the sense that we don't have any regional growers. Sit down next time and look at your plate of food and try it. We all have enough information to know where rice in this country is grown and where the apples come from. Sit down and look at your plate of food and calculate the miles that it took for that food, the caloric energy involved to get that food to your plate. And then ask yourself if food coming from 5,000 miles away would have as much energy as food grown in your county or the next county. And the Chinese call it qi. They call it life force. They call it energy. And I guarantee you, food that travels thousands of miles in cans and packages and planes and trucks and in warehouses in different temperatures and grown by people who could care less and grown with chemical compounds, and they're growing it for monoculture, greed, money situation, is there life force in that food? Is there qi? Is there energy? And then people wonder where cancer comes from. If you eat food that is light, I mean, it looks good, it tastes good, it's vibrant, it's alive, it has a life force in it, that's a medicine. That's what we were meant to eat. And that's what's been stolen from us, is that type of food. That's it's another aspect that most of us never thought about in many respects.
Start by locally grown vegetables, but what if they're watering their fields with
chlorinated
city water?
Sure. Right now it's a constant battle and compromise.
Repeat the question.
The question was, what if the local folks who are growing your produce are using pesticides and herbicides and chlorinated water? It's a constant series of compromises and little battles for your health. Because it's almost next to impossible to be that diligent 24 hours a day with the food, the water, the air. And so, you know, and how many of us have the time to, like, ask the farmer who's growing our produce, what kind of water do you use? You know, what are the minerals and what are the things in the food? You can only do so much, and you can only control so much, and you have to put some faith out there. And so, maybe by this, is this organically grown? Is this organically grown under the California Organic Food Act of 1990 or so? Because those folks, still at this time, even though that word is going to be bastardized and stolen from us, that word, but we fought hard to get that word organic to mean something, and now the great supermarkets and great monoculture food chain wants that word because it means more cash, and they got people duped. That we worked hard to establish what organic means: unchlorinated water, unfertilized by unnatural means, no pesticides. You know, food that's so at this time, you really almost have to demand that the food is organic. You may have to pay a little bit more, but you go to support usually small family farms. You go to support techniques. It's like some people in the herb world, they say, well, why are your herbs, you know, my bulk herbs, right? And I said, you know, I drive 200 miles, climb this canyon, pick these herbs. And they ask me why it's $10 a pound, you know, these some of these people. And I said, well, you folks in the great herb scene talk about ethical wildcrafting. I said, you know, that costs money. You know, to ethically wildcraft, for me to constantly find new canyons and new mountains, to not come back to places, to rotate my stands, to pick slowly, to pick in a way that I am essentially pruning. I was taking the time to plant seeds so that I know that my visit was a benefit, was a stewardship, and not a rape, you know. And so you have a lot of people who talk about organic food or ethical wildcrafted plants, but they just want the word. Because it means money, and they don't really understand the concepts. You have to pay a little bit more. But, you know, maybe the tomatoes are $2 a pound, but Safeway tomatoes are 69 cents a pound. But I guarantee you the $2 a pound tomato is worth every single penny because it has a qi, it has life force, it doesn't have cancer-causing chemicals in it, and everything that the Safeway tomato, most of the time, I can just, you know, what is evil? It doesn't taste the same. I always translate evil into these little things, like overpackaging, like styrofoam cups, like, you know, like consuming and throwing away, and like, you know, like Safeway tomatoes. Translate evil, I translate into little tangible things, because evil is an immense concept, and sometimes it's easier for me to understand on a smaller level. Because it's unnatural, and it gets back to relating to nature. The more you relate to nature, the more self-sufficiency you have, the more strength, the more health you have, and that's the greatest concept behind way behind herbal medicine, and even behind organic food and clean water, is that once upon a time we had a better relationship to nature than we do now. You know, we had greater, more family farms, we had a greater understanding, and thus we had better health, and we had more freedom back in those times. And someone over there in the hierarchy saw that, hey, if we take nature away from people, we've got them. We've got them right where it counts. So, little battles. Little stands, organic food, no chlorinated water, some vitamins, vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin E. There's hundreds of supplements out there, but to me, vitamin A, vitamin C, and vitamin E become, they're all antioxidants. They're all in high demand, and we live in a very stressful, stress and pollution and food additives and poisons in our food actually demand that we take those three vitamins because they are depleted and sucked from our body by so many different factors. Stress alone will destroy vitamin A and vitamin E and vitamin C. Stress causes a lot of vitamin consumption. And with those three vitamins, of all the hundreds of supplements, are the three to learn more about and to focus in on. So, cancer, no chlorinated water, vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin E, organic food, those are the real approach. I mean, I know some people want, what's the magic herb for cancer? Well, there are a couple that would be, you know, chaparral, Larea tridentata, our daughter's named after the genus of that plant, Larea, L-A-R-R-E-A. And tridentata, like trident, you know, means three-leafed. And Larea tridentata grows in the Sonoran and Chihuahua deserts. The desert's just a little bit south of us, down here in the flats. And it governs great vast areas of Mexico and the southwestern United States. It's a very common shrub, extremely common. And in the Mexican herbal tradition, it's called gobernadora, or the governess. It's also called hedinandia, which means the little stinker, because it smells like creosote. It's very, you know, tastes bad, smells bad, but it's a powerful plant because it contains over 260 chemical constituents. Dozens of volatile oils and resins, and there's such a great pharmacy, a chemical factory in this plant, that when you have a medicinal plant that has a lot of chemicals, what you essentially have is a plant that has a lot of medicinal possibilities. I kind of look at the human body as a big fleshy bag that has a lot of chemicals in it, and there's chemical change and chemical activity constantly going on. And when you take chemicals from the outside and put them in the body, you essentially cause change. And always remember, a definition of herbal medicine is herbs cause change. And what kind of change do you want is what you're really asking about this herb. What kind of change does peppermint cause in the body? What kind of change does chamomile cause? What kind of change does chaparral or creosote bush cause in the body? And the answer is, chaparral or creosote bush causes immense chemical change in the body because it contains hundreds of chemical compounds and alkaloids, some of which, like NDGA, nordic hydrochloric acid, dissolves tumors, benign and malignant tumors. And there's a lot of science and research associated with chaparral in cancer research. They also found that if you take 4 or 5 pounds of chaparral a day, you might end up with cancer. duh. I mean, sometimes, you know, the research they do is just, you know, they're not looking for answers. You know, they're kind of trying to validate their existence through a lot of bogus paperwork. Obviously, chaparral is a chemically complex plant. If you were to eat 4 or 5 pounds a day, it makes you sick, probably kill you. But the amount necessary for dissolving tumors, both topically and internally, is small amounts. Maybe for the average adult who has a benign tumor, a skin growth of some sort, you might want to get a chaparral salve and actually apply that topically, or take chaparral leaves and make a tea and then bathe your ulcer or your tumor or your growth or your wart with the tea. You could do that, and maybe take some capsules 2 or 3 times a day internally. And if it makes your stomach upset, take less or take it with food. Herbs often require us to participate. As when we do the walk and start to unload information about specific plants that we're actually seeing, remember, herbal medicine requires an intelligence of use. I mean, some people really love 10 drops or 2 tablets 3 times a day, and that's it. They don't want, that's all they want, to know. Herbal medicine, you have an option, 10 to 60 drops, depending on what time of day or how much you need, or maybe you're a sensitive person and you only need 5, 10 drops of a medicine. Somebody who's really concrete and hard to reach chemically, like myself, it takes me 60 drops because I need hardcore chemical change in my body from a mind-body balance or a thought process going. I want to taste ugly so I feel the effects. Some people are super sensitive, 5 drops, and actually, so herbal medicine requires us to participate in our health more than almost any other form of medicine. Requires you to make teas, requires you to strain them, requires you to steep them a long time, requires you to taste the ugliness of some of them, requires you to participate, but in that is an awakening, and in that is what healing's all about, participating. It's a big part of it. You can have the answers in one hand, and if the person doesn't like the taste and doesn't want to participate in their health, what can you do? And I can see that in my own family. Mother with health problems, son, famous herbalist, well known, everybody from around our area comes to the shop and to us, and it's like, his mom just doesn't want to hear it, so that's hard to accept, but you realize, you can't make everybody do it. All you can do is deliver the information, let them choose, and that is enough, because that's kind of what is one of the jobs on the quest, is all you can do. So chaparral does many things. It's a cancer herb. It really helps to dissolve tumors and growths, both benign and malignant. It's one I would personally rely on if I had a skin cancer or a tumor going on. Internally, I wouldn't blood work. I would kind of want to monitor my blood work. And actually, probably what I'd do besides monitor my blood work, if I took it internally and it made me nauseous, gave me headaches, gave me diarrhea, it would probably tell me that it was inappropriate somewhat, or maybe I needed to take much less of it internally for cancer. In conjunction with blood work, in blood work, what you're looking for is just a too great increase in white blood cells, which you could, if you increase white blood cells for too long, you can just fatigue the body out. And the two main blood cells in the human body are the red blood cells and the white blood cells, and the white blood cells really are nothing more than garbage men, garbage trucks. And the white blood cells are responsible for fighting viruses, removing toxins and things that the body doesn't need. And they scavenge and they multiply and they go out. If you have too many white blood cells and there is no viruses, there are no bacteria, you could get problems like leukemia, autoimmune arthritis, or a whole variety of problems where the problem is that you're making too many white blood cells. And the white blood cells start attacking healthy tissue. So herbs really are very, herbs do cause white blood cells to increase. A lot of herbs do this, and that's why they're so effective against viruses and bacteria. And chaparral, remember, if it tastes really bitter, tastes chemically complex, it's oily and resin, is probably going to cause a lot of change in your body, which means you're going to need very small amounts, and you're going to have to mentally participate with this. Plants like peppermint or chamomile or, you know, they're not chemically complex. They don't really have the chemical factory violence. You know, they're gentle. They're safe. You can use them in children. You don't have to worry about toxicity or this chemical complexity. And what I like to do, instead of just rattling off sometimes about, you know, peppermint is good for stomach aches, chamomile is good for this, I like to weave these concepts, you know, talk to you about a plant, but these other concepts, which always come back to the plant, really maximizes our time. You know, I haven't gotten the other questions. We're still on cancer, but I've touched upon a lot of it. If you ask me about pneumonia or diabetes, or if you ask me about what we've talked about, is applicable in all these other problems. You know, so chaparral, you know, to end this question here, you know, no chlorinated water, organic food, exercise. If you're looking for one herb, if you have tumor-orientated growths, either benign or malignant, then chaparral is a possible herb to bring in for cancer. That's a good starting place. Any
Dr. Kressler stated once that a lot of the herbs and vitamins in the health food stores are basically inadequate or impotent. Would you comment on this?
Is most of the herbs are most of the herbs or vitamins inadequate, impotent, you know, void of any life force or chi? And the answer, it used to be yes. There are a lot of good companies now that they use wildcrafted herbs, they use organically grown stuff, they use freeze-dried techniques, they make really good herbal extracts. But there's no substitute for you knowing 5 or 10 plants that grow around you and you taking the time to pick them, or you finding the local herbalist who does this daily. You know, it's kind of like the food chain, you know. The rice from 5,000 miles away will not be nowhere near as good as the rice if you could grow it in your bioregion or in your, you know, in your county or in the tri-county area. Herbs are like that. Herbs are often picked and ground up, stored away. By the time you reach them in capsules or in tea form, they're a couple years old in some cases, a year old probably on the average, which means when you take a plant, a plant medicine from the wild, grind it up into a powder, store it away in a warehouse, order it, ship it, it's lost, God knows how much, 60-70% of its, just chemistry-wise, the chemicals have broken down. The oils have evaporated. And to answer your question, if you're counting on herbal medicine for extremely serious things, I would recommend you seek out people who are real herbalists. Not, you know, herbal cowboys or kind of, you know, they took a correspondence course and now call themselves master herbalists. And they don't pick plants in the wild. To me, here's my definition of what I feel is an herbalist that I would go to if I had a question. Is somebody who spends a lot of time in the field, they know and have studied the eclectic physicians. The eclectic physicians were regular MDs who chose to use botanical medicine. Eclectic physicians of the 1800s in this country often had degrees in theology, philosophy, botany, geology, medicine. The average physician's desk reference book in the 1800s, which was called the United States Dispensatory, or was called the National Formulary, or Materia Medicus, contained 90% herbal medicine. That's what the MDs, especially the eclectic physicians, used in this country. 90% of their medicines were plant medicines. So maybe looking for an herbalist who picks their own plants, makes their own extracts, know of the eclectic physician tradition. They spend a lot of time in nature, which means they pick their plants, they get good, high-quality medicines. That's a very, in herbal medicine, it's called the oral tradition. In herbal medicine right now, we have a great movement called phytotherapy. And that's going from the oral tradition, that's going from real clinical herbal medicine to Merck and Johnson & Johnson and IG Farben or whatever, all these great pharmaceutical companies, chemicals, patented, owned, phytotherapy, which means plant medicine for the most part, but it's not herbal medicine in the ancient oral tradition. I believe in using science, folklore, empirical observation, cause and effect, listening, intuition, and my elders, my eclectic physicians, you know, talking to people, listening to their recipes, listening to their ideas. That's the kind of people you want to deal with. I think that's the kind of people I want to deal with if I have herb questions. I want an herbalist who picks his own or her own plants, because that is what the heart of herbal medicine is about. They know the plants, they pick the plants, and when they do that, they understand them as medicine in a different way. They understand them in a way that commerce could never touch upon. And there are many herbalists and people who practice in this country, and all they do is they buy their herbs, and they never pick them. And they are missing the heart of the art of herbal medicine. So most herbs in commerce are very suspect, and I hope that answered your question.
Where do you get your water?
For a long time, we got it from the hot springs coming off the canyon. We get our water from the well, from a well. Where do we get our water? Sorry, I'm just never good at repeating the questions. But good well water, and if you're choosing well water, you would like to choose well water. I mean, a filter's even better. Always have a filter, even if it's well water or spring water, unless the source you're getting it from is just absolutely pure beyond belief. But well water, I feel, is okay if the well isn't 6,000 feet deep. I mean, personally, I feel we were never meant to drink deep water. We're surface creatures. We always drink out of ponds. We always drink out of streams. We always drink out of rain puddles. I mean, we drank surface water up until the last 100 years, give or take a few exceptions throughout the world. You know, in the Middle East where they had deep wells, you know, historic 1,000-year-old wells that deep by maybe 100 feet, you know. So if you have wells, it's kind of nice to have wells in areas where there's not a lot of agriculture, where there are a lot of herbicides and surface pesticides and such. And if you're in an area like that, even with good tasting well water, you might want to consider a water filter. And
what do you think of bottled water?
I think it's a multi-billion-dollar industry of major suspect. When you've got a gallon of water with a beautiful picture of a crystal clear spring, bottled water, what do you think of bottled water? Well, here's it's called Glacier Springs water. If you look at the fine print, it's bottled in Miami, Florida.
Out of the tap.
Reverse osmosis or run through a charcoal filter just to remove the chlorine taste, and that's all. And removing chlorine taste doesn't mean they removed the chlorine in large amounts. And also, I cannot remember the whole chemical steps, but boiling chlorinated water doesn't remove all the chlorine. In fact, heat and chlorine create a new chlorine type of molecule that's even more carcinogenic than chlorine water coming straight out of the tap. So, now there is a time you could boil it and let it stand. I mean, chlorine, just if it's suspected, bottled water, I don't trust. I really don't. I mean, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry, and when you have that going on, I mean, you know they're just not going. There's going to be some brands out there that taste great and are good, but most of them are just out for the buck, and they're not going. They could care less about your health. They're going along with the bandwagon. Chlorine, I mean, so it's so much better whenever you can. Buy water filter, filter your own water, and learn to carry your own water where you go, because you'll do two things. You'll have a sure source of water that's filtered and coming, and it's also water that you're used to. And when I talk this afternoon about viruses and delivery systems and things to really start to watch out for, information I feel is more important than ever before, stuff that I've been very focused on for my own self, my family, and my community, is watching viruses and the explosion of viruses and the use of viruses to destroy us. Because they're not going to come with us. I don't feel they're going to come for me with guns. They got viruses. Viruses are wicked because they may be created by an evil entity, this corporation. Once those viruses are created, they become their own entity and aren't necessarily working for the people who design them anymore. They are the wickedest of creatures to deal with. And very much, they're here, they're now, they're mutating, they are here. They have been released. They are with us, and they're very, very dangerous. And so this afternoon, when I talk about viruses, it'll be even more important why you would want to start to carry your own water supply, water that you know is safe. Because as time goes on, that'll be another avenue of approach.
It was really interesting that three or four days ago, I was at a mine in Arizona. But it was just a big chunk of land. And to show how mineral rich the land was, they put some mercury in a tray, and the well water, they just started running it into mercury. And a little after about 5 minutes or so, the platinum and gold in the water started separating. You could actually see it on the water, glistening. And that, to me, it blew my mind, because here's this well water coming out of the ground, and all of a sudden you can actually see these minerals that are separating and doing weird things. It's like an oil spill on the water, you know, how it looks like a rainbow. Anyway, when you talk about well water, I just want to bring that up. Back to my question was, when you pick a plant, herb or tomato or whatever, that plant's going to have the most energy in it. Over a period of time, like a day, does it work? Like, when does it start getting to at 50% or 75%? So, like, you pick an herb, the best time to consume it would be immediately or within an hour or 2 hours before it.
When's the best time to pick plants as far as their energy and life force?
As far as consuming it.
Right. We'll come to that when we walk outside and give you examples of root material, of aerial material. Each plant dictates something a little bit different. It's not like you have to memorize what each plant is, but fresh is always best. Eating it as a food would be optimum. Recently dried material has a shelf life. Say, like, leaf and flowers have shelf life for a good 6 months, especially if you went out and picked it or you grew it and you dried it, not in direct sun, but you dried it on a little cardboard flat in a shady spot in your kitchen or on the back porch. That dried leaf and flower material would probably be good for good medicinal medicine to count on for a good 6 months. If you learn how to make extracts, then you can preserve all those chemical constituents from the harvest, say, fresh peppermint leaf, and then extract it in alcohol, either vodka or some rum or pure Britannia or Everclear, the 96%, wickedly, blinding stuff. But a solvent, alcohol dehydrates. Alcohol is the great one, is a great plant preservative and solvent. Most plants do really well. I mean, as you can see, we make a lot of extracts. Alcohol does two things. It dehydrates and pulls all the chemical constituents out of the plant, stabilizes them, suspends them, preserves them for the most part. And most herbal extracts are good for many years. The chemicals are there. A lot of the energy is there. You've lost some of the pure chi of fresh material, but the chemistry of that plant, the chi chemistry, is still there. And when you take an herbal extract, it goes into the bloodstream instantly. And so for, like, some of the super viruses that will be coming up, you may not have time to drink 10 cups of tea a day. You may have to resort to concentrated herbal alcohol extracts, because when you take an herbal extract that's alcohol, 60-70% alcohol and 30% water, the moment it touches the cells, it's absorbed into the bloodstream and converted. Now, most alcohol in small amounts is converted over to sugar, and in that conversion, you're dragging all those chemical constituents with the plant. In the conversion process, absorption is instantaneous, and often that is a good way to do it. You preserve you can preserve some plant material for several years through herbal extracts. Roots last longer because root material, like dandelion root, which we'll see out here, dandelion root, because it's a root, it's molecularly tight. It's a strong, fibrous, solid substance that in order to make a tea from, you have to chop it up and cook it for a long time to break it down. But it has an advantage. Root material can last 2 or 3 years stored properly. If you grow your own herbs or harvest your own herbs, it's good to store them in glass mason jars or cur jars, if you don't like the word mason. And then you can go down to the recycling center and get 3 mason jars.
But, 33 herbs at night's average.
You know, it's so serious.
Well, that's all the time we have, folks. I hope you learned something. And I'm sorry you missed our annual conference, because it was 5 days of the most incredible information that you just can't get anywhere else. Good night, folks. And God bless each and every single one of you.
Get for a king, get for a queen. Get your laundry cleaner than clean with King's washing machine. All of your clothes brighter than new.
You've been listening to The Hour of the Time with yours truly, William Cooper. This is 101.1 FM Eager, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM is your nonprofit community service radio station. We now return you to all oldies most of the time.